You're listening to the Minimum Viable Podcast, which explores design with a small d. It means design that looks for solutions to problems which people face every day. We bring topics which usually are not associated with design, however, are related to it. My name is Michal Blažej. I'm the co-founder of customer experience studio Lighting Beetle, and this is the Minimum Viable Podcast. Our podcast is usually in the Slovak language. However, this time we had a special guest, Johannes Helberger, sound artist from Berlin who used his artistic experience to become one of few pioneer experts in the uncharted field of UX in sound design.
Every company has UX designers now, and none of them knows a lot about sound.
We discussed that even the biggest players on the market haven't figured out yet how sound should be used.
I'm really astounded at how many also quite expensive objects still do beep sounds, which are super annoying.
Johannes told me about his work at the Sound Innovation Lab, past, present and future of sound in UX, and we also touched on cultural differences in this field.
For example, in my life, I don't need microwave to talk, but it might be different in Japan, yeah.
Hi Johannes, welcome to the MVP.
Hi Michal, thanks for inviting me. Looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, me too. First, I'd like to talk about sound as a medium. Because I work in UX and most of the interactions and experience we're building are about vision, what the user sees. Why should I even consider sound relevant in an interaction with a machine?
Yeah, I recognize that the word UX already is like a huge field, and some people think of apps and web designs, and some people think of services and onboarding processes. So all in all, it's about user experience, right? And when you talk about experience, I think it's already implicated that at least sound in certain situations or in certain cases can help, because we might all know that sound triggers emotions, for example. And when you design an experience, you want people maybe to be in a certain mood. And when you have people in a certain mood, they might enjoy an experience much more, or you can alter how people experience whatever you design. So let me say two things maybe. I think the first thing is sound in experience, and the second thing is the functional part. So the first thing, I find the strengths of sound in, you know, triggering emotions, get you in a certain mood. And the other one is really like a functional thing where we have more machines, so to say, or computerized objects which interact with us. And more we have objects without screens, right? And now, as we don't have screens so much anymore, you have to change the whole interaction concept. For example, the rise of smart speakers already is like a complete audio interface and voice assistants and all these things. So it's definitely a trend towards more audio and less visual, even though I think visual still is a very important part, of course, of all design aspects, because we want to create holistic experiences. And there's a big buzzword in immersive experience. You want to immerse the user, the visitor, the people into the experience you design. And there, I think you need to consider all senses. At least your design, your user experience can definitely benefit if you do so.
Of course, the first thing that popped into my mind was the emotions. I do listen to music. I felt also the art installations. But it's interesting when you say that, of course, the sound can carry some information. And it's interesting to say that there are so many machines around us now that the sound actually can help you navigate which machine wants to interact with you and how you should proceed. So that's definitely something special.
Exactly. I'm working in sound for more than 20 years now, and I've been doing a lot of art projects and all kinds of projects, and actually I had to explain again and again to people what sound can do, because we normally very subconsciously perceive sound, and it definitely affects us subconsciously. And for that, to have some arguments also, and to show what sound can do, in the Sound Innovation Lab we gathered scientific evidence, and I made a small list, and I think this could be interesting for you and maybe the listeners listeners, that there were scientific studies in all kinds of direction, and it shows that with using sound in the right way, people feel safer in a place, for example, or they stay longer in a place or a shop. They might leave sooner. It can raise the perceived value of products in a store, or the other way around. There's a nice study about wine tasting. So with the right music, the wine tasted better and people would buy more wine. And then there was a study in a hospital environment where it shows that it can have a positive impact on health. And on the other hand, noise has severe impacts on our health in a bad way. It can help us to concentrate while we work or let go when we meditate, can drive us when we run. It can also alter our moral evaluation and induction of empathy in films, meaning that you think somebody is doing something right or wrong when you have different music in the film, you know?
Right, I can relate.
And then we recently made a project also with Volkswagen, and it shows that sound can create trust, for example, in autonomous vehicles. And another colleague of mine, Frederick Robinson, he did this with social robots and also showed that people would trust a robot more if the sound is done right. And then maybe some real life examples, which I found very interesting. I was on a way to a talk where I was actually talking about this, like sound and user experience. And I was a bit late, so I took a taxi. And the cab driver, we were talking about the topic, and the cab driver told me, you know, he's a Berlin cab driver, and sometimes he picks up people from clubs at 10 o'clock in the morning or 12 and super high people. And he said, you know, sometimes he suggests to them, let me play you some classic music to calm down. When you come home, you can sleep well. And some people do that. And he said, when he plays classic music, these people calm down. If he has to play like techno music, these people would be super annoying.
That is super interesting. I'm coming from the web and app environment, and I was recapping my experience of us designing sounds. And we use sound for micro interactions in apps. We've designed a taxi app, and when the taxi actually comes, maybe you don't have the screen on, so it's good when you actually hear the sound of the taxi coming. But also then we're designing these charging apps for electronic vehicles, and of course you can give some gimmick or something that makes people happy once the car is charged, but also provides you the information that the car is actually charged and the charging is finished. But from what you're saying, I'm kind of thinking, like, aren't we missing all these, like, the emotional part of that sound? The webs and apps don't really carry the emotional part that often. Have you ever thought about this?
Actually, a lot. I mean, when the internet came out, if you can say so, or it got more into our real world in the 90s and beginning of zeros, many people started to have music in their websites, right?
Right, yes, I remember that.
I was quite young and I made, like, some, let's say, cheesy musical background ambient loops for websites. And then people create culture around how to use things. And definitely the culture was, I don't want to have music because I might listen to music myself right now and I might have 20 tabs open and I don't know where this annoying music comes from, so I close it all. So basically, if you design a website and people close it as fast as possible because they don't want to be disturbed, actually the worst thing you can do when you design a website. And I think it always depends on the use case. So I don't want my apps and also my smartphone to do more sounds than I need. If something makes a lot of sound, it kind of intrudes my private sphere, then I don't want it. But for example, when I order a pizza here with one of those many services, of course I'm happy that I hear, there's a sound looking at the screen, okay, pizza will be there in 5 minutes. That's a moment. You don't want to look at the app in that certain moment a lot, and this is a useful case. So
right.
I think exactly what you said. It depends what you want the user to do. If you want the user to put on the headphones and indulge themselves in your app, maybe education or entertainment or whatever, sound can be valuable. If it's just like a service you do aside of many other things, you don't want sound, I guess.
Okay, and how about this? I'm thinking now that when that pizza order is coming, the sound comes out of my mobile phone, but it can sound very generic, but it can also carry emotion. So don't we oversee opportunities of the sounds that actually carry information that they could be also emotional? Do you think that could be maybe improved?
Completely. I completely think it's a sound is still in UX design. It's beneath its potential. I'm really astounded at how many also quite expensive objects still do beep sounds, which are super annoying and have nothing to do with the visual design of that object. And for example, with a pizza app case, I think you could create a sound which kind of implies that the pizza is ready, for example. And that's something I talked about with people who created apps. What do you want your app to be? Do you want it to be like a little friendly helper, or do you have like a bank service and it needs to be super serious, you know? So if your pizza servicing is a little helping friend, you should have a friendly sound which in the best case also communicates you that the pizza is ready.
I can imagine, and I think you had in your presentation the example of the kitchen machines, like all the different, the stove, the microwave, and they all have these terrible beep sounds that, you know, scare you. One thing that's interesting to me, I was recently in Japan and all the machines, they don't beep, they talk to you, basically. They have these nice sounds. And when you said, like, you don't want to be disturbed, I think that that's a very cultural thing, because maybe here in Europe, we like the no sound approach, but in Asia, and specifically in Japan, they may actually like if everything talks to them. Have you ever spotted these cultural differences in sound?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you could make things which Germans would consider super cheesy, while in, let's say, India, where we have a Bollywood culture, or also Brazil, where I've been, kitsch is not a big problem, or many European countries are also more to reduction than, let's say, more extravagant things. And regarding Japan, they have this huge culture of robotics also in their art, in their mangas, in their films. I've never been to Japan, so I cannot tell you what this is about. For me, in my realm of experience, I'm super annoyed when my Bluetooth speaker talks super loud when I put it on. For example, I had also this in my other presentation. It's like when you have a child and it sleeps and you want to put on some calming music, but then you put on your Bluetooth speaker and the highest volume it can get tells you that your mobile phone is disconnected, then it completely disturbs the atmosphere. For example, in my life, I don't need microwave to talk, but might be different in Japan, yeah.
Yeah, that is super true. I never use that Bluetooth speaker in the shower because, you know, when I turn it on in the morning, it disturbs all my neighbors, basically, because it's so loud. Exactly the same use case, you're right. Let me just ask you to maybe summarize the different categories of where good sound design is very needed today. I can imagine automotive, of course. Maybe you talked about the kitchen smart devices. What are the other categories where maybe we don't see it explicitly, but there's so many sound designs that we just oversee?
Yeah, right. I think, as you said, cars, because it's a high workload situation, you know, you have traffic, you, at least when it's not autonomous, you get a lot of signals and you have more and more assistance systems and entertainment. So you need basically all means you can get to communicate with the user without disturbing him and giving him more trouble than he already has.
Okay, that's very interesting, because like what you're saying is that, okay, I'm already computing with my vision, but my ears are free. So that actually helps, because then I can combine all the different inputs in my brain and use that information to drive the car correctly. So yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, just struck me how interesting it is.
Yeah, that's exactly true. Until now, a lot of user feedback sounds and UX sounds are made just in a way like there's generic sound and then you have to look at a screen. But if you design the sounds in a way that they intuitively make you understand what's happening and you don't have to look at a screen, you win a lot in a situation like in a car or with other things when you don't disturb the user. Another thing is with smart technology, which I recognize is not as smart as people say so. I was at the IFA this year. It's kind of an electronic fair. So everything was smart there, but everything, we started to record UX sounds and 90% was beep tones. And for example, what I find an interesting case, and I actually want to do one, is the, you know, these small vacuum cleaner robots?
Mm-hmm.
For many people, these things become like a little pet in a way. You know, they give them names, they really like them, they're like a friend.
Oh, don't tell me. I was tackling him yesterday. We had a really nice time.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you imagine you give this thing a voice, like an R2-D2 kind of thing, this could even help you to kind of just have positive experiences with this thing. And if the, let's say, emotional expression of what it does is my battery is empty or I have a problem here, if this is done right and you create sounds which kind of have also this emotional message in them, and then from the sound design they're kind of cute or helpful, I think then you could create a product which definitely people would love even more, like their little pet basically.
I loved your comparison when you said visually how much we invest into the product design, how beautiful those are, and then it beeps. That's very interesting. Yeah,
exactly. And just a short thing, I think in health technology there's a lot potential to do, because until now it just has functional sounds and it sounds terrible and it creates a very terrible atmosphere in hospital settings. And I think there's a lot to do about creating actually atmospheres and also using the sounds which are beneficial for health and not creating more stress. Then another thing is robotics and industry, for example, also for safety reasons. If you have workers working with autonomous systems, you need certain sounds. And for example, what I really liked as a sound design in Amsterdam on the airport, you know, these little wagons where the pedestrians walk, right? And sometimes there's this wagon with elder people or with some stuff in the back, and they have to drive through a mass of people basically. And in many airports, these things do these beep tones. Super annoying. So you have like these beep tones, of course, you hear the thing and it annoys you. And in Amsterdam, they have like a very warm noise, like a white noise kind of thing, or brown noise, you would say, if you know. And it is very low in volume, but you always perceive it. It doesn't disturb you. Even hearing impaired would hear it because it's on a full range spectrum of sound. And it's a super reduced and does a very functional job in a very good way. And then another topic, which we don't have to jump into much, but as you talk about apps and websites and so forth, with going towards augmented reality, virtual reality, this whole metaverse thing, when, let's say, we immerse again more into services than we have on a two-dimensional screen, sound again can be very beneficial in many ways.
I was first like, how robotics could be relevant today, but then my colleague just showed me a video of little robots delivering stuff in Estonia somewhere, and that's actually reality. And then, you know, you're saying these little wagons in Amsterdam airport, the robots are already around us, pretty much thinking about how they talk to you. It's the same case as with the electronic vehicles. When they go around, you don't hear them anymore. So what is the sound of that vehicle? So you actually are aware that it's coming.
That's another huge topic, which we might not have to go into, but there was quite a Renault Zoe bashing. You can hear it from kilometers and it sounds like a synthesizer from far, and people actually don't want more noise. They want less noise. So it's kind of a bad choice.
I was just saying, I kind of enjoy that the cars are silent. It's fine. I don't need to hear the motor sound all the time because the environment is full of sounds.
Exactly. And that's actually one important thing when you design sound for anything, is silence is gold still, right? Just if you use sound, use it in the right moment, in the right way. And if you don't need sound, and if it doesn't add value to a moment or an experience or to a service, then just leave it away.
Just like white space is gold in the visual design.
Exactly. Some people really think like, oh God, you're the guy who gonna make things have more sound in the future. And I was like no, I'm gonna try to make it in a way that it completely is embedded in your real life and it just comes into your consciousness when it's needed, like when it warns you or notifies you with something.
Before we move into the problems of sound design of today, I'd like to maybe just think about the history of sound. You probably know a bit about it. What is the history of sound design in human machine interaction?
There is this evolution from passive to active, let's say. Actually, that's the same thing also in experience design, from looking at things into experiencing things. Also, when it comes to machines and technology, there's also like coming from passive sound intervention to active sound. And there's quite some material about in the industrial revolution, apart from the stench, there was also a lot of noise. Like the first car was super noisy, the first industrial machines were super noisy. all these machines create a lot of noise. And then at one point, the manufacturers got really problems also on political sides and whatever. And then there was kind of starting to be a big, let's say, user experience sound design topic about getting rid of the noise. For example, Rolls-Royce is one of the good examples that a car which was completely silent was perceived as luxury because you had like this calm room, and this was one part what gave you this luxury that you don't have this noise. But there's also this other part which then when engineers actually made cars, for example, completely noiseless, at least in the inside, people recognize that actually the noise of a car, for example, and also with machines, give you a lot of information of what's happening. For example, if you sit in the back of a Royce and your driver is driving and you would hear that he's accelerating or braking and these things, there was some scientific testing about this, you would perceive more what the car will do, so you wouldn't be surprised if you speed up, for example. But that's just one thing. Going back to the history, so we come from the history people tried to reduce and kill the noise machines make, and then now we are at the state where we add sound. I wouldn't say noise if it's done right? But we add sound to, as I said, give us information, create right atmosphere, and have it as a means of communication, basically. Just one example to this, we are working with an OEM, with a car manufacturer, and on the UX sounds in cars. And 10 years ago, they had 20 people working on reducing the noise of the car and creating certain sound of a door and like really physical intervention. And they had like one or two sound designers who did like active sound processing. And now they have two people left who do the physical, and they have 20 people who do active sound, or 10 people. But it's really a shift right now. You actively think which sound to have in your product, in your experience.
Interesting. I'm thinking you run your own shop, Sound Innovation Lab. What kind of problems of sound design are you trying to solve? What is your mission? Why do you even got into this field? What do you see as the challenge?
I designed sound experiences in cultural and like commercial and advertisement and movies for a long time. And now I see that we are at a point where the things that surrounds us, like the technology also that surrounds us, is so far that all the, let's say, crazy stuff we did in immersive installations with tracking and all this stuff and lots of speakers and this experience which I could gather can now be helpful in our everyday life, so to say. We talked about cars. If the sound design in cars and outside of cars is done right, it could really help people and the nature and the city. And what I already talked about before is, for example, in a hospital, I think now is the time to change from noisy atmosphere to very nice atmosphere. People could actually enjoy a hospital, which right now is not the case from the whole atmosphere. And what we are working on a lot right now, we have our projects basically working with manufacturers and companies and UX designers. And then we have also the scientific part where we do scientific projects and studies. And right now we're working on, let's say, the semantics of sound. So what can you actually communicate with sound apart from what is done right now, like having generic audio logos played back in a sample player, towards really have a very efficient way to communicate information and still have the right emotional aesthetics in the sound. And things become more interactive also. So right now everything is a sample player. I don't think in the future this should be the case. I think things will be generated in the moment. Things will be adaptive to your situation, to your context. This is a good example. If you sit in your car, you have the navigation on, you might listen to music, and then the phone is ringing. There's a lot of things happening at the same time. So what if your car would start to reduce certain sounds it makes because it knows that you're on the phone, and maybe even use tactile information to still give you navigational input without having you looking at the screen? I think there's a lot of way to go if we're talking about smart technology to use sound and all other modalities in a context-sensitive way, adapting to the user situation. And these kind of systems, that's what we are actually working on. We do sound design for products, yeah. ideas. But for me, that's just an intermediate right now towards creating systems which are context sensitive, which are smart, which generate sound in that certain moment and gives electronics and machines its voice, basically.
Can you maybe give us a couple of examples of your work that you are working on right now?
Well, there's one thing about this work, you might know it, is that actually what you're working on right now normally is completely disclosed. So I'm not allowed to talk about most things I do. But as I said, we work, for example, for a car manufacturer creating sounds. And we also do research projects, how the car of the future would sound, how sound would help in autonomous cars. And there we had one project I am able to talk about. We did it with Volkswagen, the autonomous vehicle assurance system. I kind of mentioned it before, but not in detail. It's basically a concept and prototype we did also together with a technical university in Berlin, where we created a spatial sound system for the car, where if you picture yourself in an autonomous car, you sit there, you write emails or read a book or whatever. You don't want to watch the traffic, but still, you know, you give your life to this robot. So in that transition time when you actually used to drive a car, but right now then suddenly you're in a car which is driving itself, you have new problems. For example, actually it would be helpful if you know that it makes a right turn, that it's going to brake, that it's going to accelerate, so you wouldn't be disturbed when you write your email. We created a sound system which was predictive, so you would hear actually the acceleration a bit before it would start to accelerate, and you would get g-forces into your body. And very subconsciously and intuitively, your body would process this, or your perception would process this. And in a study, it was shown that people were much more relaxed and could much more concentrate on the task they were doing. That's one thing. And the other thing is sound as a transmitter of the sensors of a car. So if you see from far, there is, let's say, a bike about to cross the way of your car, and your car would show you that it recognizes this bike, then you would feel that you don't have to intervene. And so we also made sounds for these kind of things. And all these sounds in a way that they create a calm atmosphere, that they're not alarming, that it's not noise polluting. So it was quite a cool project, and the outcome was very positive. Well, the calming sound, it still gave you all the information you needed to not get in stress. And these are kind of things we work at the lab.
That is such a great idea that you don't have to by yourself think while driving, but you are processing these signals through the sound. It makes me think, how can we improve the interactions we are designing and how to make them better? Because that's really inspirational as an example for my work as well. So I'm wondering, how are you thinking about the design process? And how do you approach the design process for the sound? Is there a rigorous process that you follow, or are you exploring your ways?
Yeah, it really depends a lot on the project. In the last years, for example, I got much more contact with science and scientific studies. So this became, for example, a very important part of our work, is starting with the research. So what do we actually know about, for example, reaction time on sound, on visuals, and on haptic feedback? How can we work with this? In which case is tactile feedback better perceived than sound feedback? And whatever is the case, we try to get to a point at the status quo of knowledge. That's very often the first thing we do. Then another thing we do is do a workshop with a client to actually get deeper understanding of their needs and visions. And then also research what the user wants, because not always a client or a manufacturer, because sometimes they don't look from the outside on the product, actually know what the user wants. Also the brand wants to be represented in a product. To understand all these sides, this is kind of a very important part in the beginning. So research, the workshop. And then what I really like, and this is a bit like, I mean, you call it minimal viable podcast. That's also something something I learned right now is the idea of minimal viable product and iterative working on projects. It's very helpful if you put 3 years of development in something. It's harder to kill it when it doesn't work in the real world than if you kind of prototype it in a beta, see that it doesn't work and just kill the whole string after 2 months of work. So that's this iterative prototyping, you could say, like these design sprint things, but I'm not so much about these very, let's say, UX design biblical things. You use whatever helps. Personas are helpful. User stories are helpful. Depends what you want to do, who you talk to, and which state of a project you are, what the goals are also of the stakeholders of a project.
You're speaking my language. I completely understand every word you're saying. I'm also a big fan of this agile approach. But how is sound prototyped?
When we work with clients, also may it be agencies or may it be manufacturers, you always work with people who have to explain other people the benefits of your work. So if you work with sound designers at a car manufacturer, they have to explain their bosses why this project they want to do and why the money they want to spend actually is gonna do something good and add value. And the same thing to an agency, they also need to explain their clients the benefits of sound and concept of sound. So there are different ways. One very easy and helpful thing is, for example, a video. You just, for example, let's say in the Volkswagen project I talked about, creating the sound system, we would just take any video of an in-car autonomous vehicle capture and create sound on it for that certain situations. Actually, the whole prototype wasn't really interactive in the end, because it didn't need to be interactive. It was about an autonomous car. We also made a VR prototype, but it was a fixed route because you couldn't steer a wheel, right? So why would you create a prototype which would be interactive and adapt to certain things? But saying that, I think mood casts also, you know, for example, if you say like, I want my sound to be luxurious, I want it to be modern, I want it to be innovative and so forth, we would do a mood cast with sound samples to give these words we say, and everybody thinks of different things when they say these words, we would give it a sound and then we could talk about the sound and then we come closer, for example, to certain aesthetics people would agree on. Then, as I said, a video, also a little software could help when it's about interactive scenarios, just a click device or something which makes sounds. If we're talking about a room, let's say a store, always helps at least to see a picture and then hear the sound, like a little sound story. And also visual input helps a lot, you know, if you say like it has to sound like nature. Yeah, which nature? We would send pictures of the sea and then of the forest and say like, okay, what is nature for you? Nature is somebody on the Himalaya or somebody at the beach?
Before we wrap up, I'd like to ask you about the future of sound design. Where are we going in the upcoming 5 to 10 years?
If I could see the future, I would be a rich man. No joking. There are different trends. For example, I think this whole metaverse trend in the end is just more about augmented reality becomes more and more important potentially in our lives. And therefore, sound and visuals are, let's say, augmented. What we hear and see in our reality is going to be mixed with something which kind of is projected on that reality. And therefore, there's a lot of research and development from Meta and all these people, for example, to have things sound like they are in the room you're actually at, or look like in the room you're actually at. Like Apple has this thing that the lighting of an AR object is actually adapting to the lighting in your real room. And the same thing happens with sound.
We've talked about the future a bit. Maybe this interview was really interesting to me and I'd like to start learning something about the sound and how to design sound and user interactions. Where could I start? Is there any resource for that?
Actually, I have a lot of contact with UX designers and most of them have no clue about using sound and how to use sound and what fit brands and what could be functionally beneficial and so forth, which business-wise is a good thing for me because they need specialists and I see a lot of, let's say, need for that to come. There are some resources in the net which are interesting, but even if you listen to, let's say, I looked a lot at videos like the sound designer from Google and good sound designer from Meta and Facebook and so forth, most of them didn't really help.
It takes time, right?
I mean, call me.
Yeah, okay, perfect. That's a good way to go. I remember 10 years ago, there was no resource about the user experience, and now, you know, it's all over the place. So if we should call you, just give us a quick background, like how did you got excited about this topic so much? What was the trigger point for you to get excited about sound?
Sound in general, I think that was pretty early already in my life. I was always excited how sound could alter emotions and how music works. So I started with music in my life a lot. I was producing hip hop in the 90s as a kid, kind of, and went into film music later and interactive experiences and installations. And now this new topic, the sound innovation thing, just came through work because we were more and more in projects where people would ask, like, okay, how does this car of the future sound like? How can we make this navigation system better with sound? I just saw the need coming. I still see it coming. Every company has UX designers now, and none of them knows a lot about sound. So that's one thing. So I'm excited what sound can do, and I like that it works subconsciously when I do music, for example, for a theater piece on opera, which I do sometimes, and I perform it very often. I perform it live in the background. It's kind of like pulling the strings of emotionality and creating a space, creating an atmosphere, and helping people to forget their day-to-day and immerse into the piece. And it has some magic. You cannot touch sound. It is not a material. It's basically air propagating. That's why it's so hard for many people to grasp, but that's also the magic, what excites me about it.
And that is also a nice bridge to my last question. Johannes, do you have any personal design challenge that you would like to solve?
Quite a lot, yeah. I mean, I recognized that I kind of overestimated maybe the potential of abstract sounds, like on an informational base. So how much can UX sounds actually communicate, you know, like if it's just three tones and a beep, can it really tell you like my battery is empty, or you still have to look at the screen, right? It sounds maybe like a small niche thing, but this is really something we think about a lot, like how can actually sound communicate in the best possible way with all these things like being nice and being subtle in the background and being efficient and have some nice aesthetics. So this whole thing becomes really a challenge in this new UX world we indulge ourselves in the last years, and it's still a lot to find out and a lot to try out, and there's a long way to go because the sound design in products and UX until now is far from being good, basically.
Well, you definitely inspired me today to look more into the sound design, and I know where to start learning about it, so I'll contact you.
Well, I can tell you, if things come to my mind, I might send you some links and you can give that to your listeners also. There are definitely some articles which are very interesting and inspiring about UX sounds, but there's definitely not a lot out there. I also thought about giving more maybe workshops and lessons or design principles and so forth. What you could look at, what I find a good thing, is this whole topic of CALM technology. Like CALM, CALM technology. It's kind of a design principle. And it also talks about sound. It talks about modern human-machine interaction, and it kind of gives a good overview of what I think is a good approach to use sound.
Thank you. Well, we'll put these links into our podcast description. Nevertheless, I'd love to collaborate with you, so I hope we'll have sometimes in the future a project together. But for today, I thank you very much for being part of this podcast, and I hope hope to hear you soon.
Thanks a lot. I would like to add something. We are always looking for people who want to collaborate on projects, be it on a scientific level, be it on an intern or a work student level. We also look for people who want to work at the lab. And of course, if people don't know how sound could help them, we also always have an open ear. And if after that people think, oh, that's a good idea, we want to work, that's great. If not, you know, if I think sound is a very bad idea in your case, I will tell you, and then that's also fine.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the invitation, and we'll post the information in the podcast desk so people can get to it. Thank you.
Cool.
The Minimum Viable Podcast is brought to you by CX Design Studio Lighting Beetle. For more content in English, including case studies and handouts, visit our website lbstudio.sk. Thanks for listening.